Okay, moving right along, I've got a question that could be answered by people doing research or people who fund research. And I'd like each of the panel members to respond from either of those perspectives that fits with what you do. And basically, looking to the future, and not just 1 or 2 years, but out 3, 5, 10 years, what do you see as the most important needs in terms of development potential for areas of R&D? Again, both from the funding and from the investigation side. Would you like to start?
Yes, well, I have this doubt that the... I'm in a relatively good voice if I have to be.
It's just we're taping this.
Right, say that.
Well, every good idea needs to be on tape.
Right. To my mind, there are two interlinked problems, and I've to some extent said this already. The first one, several of us agree that some of these have to be turned into business solutions before they have any currency at all. And remember that we are looking at markets which are more akin to the washing machine market than the surgical instrument market. So the way of getting them into the market is different. And it may well be that the financial constraints are such that an appreciable proportion of the market may be found from consumers, who I understand from some people who were talking to me earlier on at lunchtime, that as much money is spent on alternative medicine in the United States as is spent on ordinary medicine. So there is clearly not enormous shortage of money. So, but there is a real market, and maybe one ought to think of this as not being government provision. The other one, which I'm very keen on, and I've made this clear already, is that there is going to be a very considerable net shortage of labor. And this means, I think, a mobilization of the community, and ways have to be found of bringing this about within a generation. Because if we can't do this within a generation, then the technology just isn't going to take off. It's terrible. We are really leaving a very bad heritage for our children, of a very stressed community.
I'd just like to follow up. I certainly agree that getting anything we develop into the marketplace is important, and we got problems with labor in the future. But in terms of the research and development, I was speaking more toward the technology itself and your thoughts on where we need to go with that.
I would recommend the moratorium. I think I said this this afternoon. I think we are taking our eye off the ball by saying, let's go have more and more and more technology, which we can't apply in a business-like way. There is so much contemporary technology about, which has not anything like the whole of its goodness wrung out of it. I've been trying to persuade my university to have an institute of contemporary technology, which is almost forbidden to go into new technology, but which should be dedicated to exploiting the technology which we have already. Otherwise, the resources are simply not going to be applied in the right sort of way. It's an escape from reality to push to expand the envelope of what we already know all the time.
Well, I just wanted to say, on one level, I completely agree with you, but I think...
I completely agree with you that the basic technology is there. We don't need any more basic technology, but it's, for the most part, half-baked and not really ready to be accepted into people's lives, and that in itself is a valuable research area.
Well, there have been many comments. Almost every speaker addressed the issue of there are plenty of technologies around, and what we're doing is really, I hate to say this, is becoming a product development kind of research in contrast to basic scientific research. Nothing wrong with that, but I mean that's the change that has occurred as I have observed it. And from the National Science Foundation point of view, you see there's little science involved in what we've been talking about. It's really technology, developed technology, that doesn't need to be reinvented, although the new nanotechnology nanoscience, shall we say, is very likely to reinvent some of the technologies that are already available and presumably bring far more performance capability. What is it, shall I say, the exception that proves the rule at the National Science Foundation in assistive technology, which has to do with getting the user involved in the research, is the project which started something like 6-7 years ago at NSF on the artificial retina, which was mentioned by you earlier. Probably the German project you had in mind. Anyway, the artificial retina. Now there's one that you cannot do without having a user. It turns out there are plenty of people standing in line who want to be subjects for artificial retinas. But the point of this is that from a scientific point of view, the artificial retina has many problems for which the knowledge that have to be solved, for which no knowledge exists, or so little knowledge exists, that you have scientific problems to solve along the way to developing an artificial retina. There's really nothing like this that I can see in the smart home. Having said that, where is the business model? Because that seems to be what everyone so far has agreed is weak.
Can I have a follow-up? Wireless
technology. See, we spent quite a bit of time trying to get funding. And what we've discovered, and I'd like to see if people agree, is there is a huge chasm between NIH and NSF. We're right in the middle.
Thank goodness, that means we have a reason to exist.
Exactly. Well, NSF funds science, NIH funds applications, once you have pilot data, and what we're talking about is some mix of technology development and applications with people, and there's no funding institute that I know of that's really targeted in that area, and that's critical to make some progress in the future to identify that.
I meant to build on my artificial retina example. The NSF original grant for artificial retina was $155,000, just to show that there was a possibility that with a rabbit eye, an electrical impulse would result in a light flash in the rabbit's brain. That project, 4.5 years later, was elevated to an NIH award of $12.5 million because our project showed XYZ was possible, including blind dogs and so forth. So that model exists, and that's a great one. I mean, it works, and it has worked in more than one case.
Well, I think the flaw in that model in this situation is that as we try and develop smart home technology, we don't have the opportunity to propose something that is cutting-edge science technology. And getting the initial funding so that you can get to the point where you have key applications that you can then test in a hypothesis-driven environment like NIH is very difficult. We're doing it piecemeal. Each time somebody manages to get their technical application strong enough to be able to work with a group of clinicians to answer questions that are hypothesis-driven, we're doing it. But I think that the whole field would be able to address the issues of supporting the aging if we could actually get some center support around this issue.
So on the same thought, I mean, more complications come into this, because one of the things, and I'm into this because I'm interested in, to a certain extent, recognizing behaviors. Now, that even gets really complicated, because, for example, how do you recognize behaviors related to depression? Now, in that instance, I mean, you really need to have some sort of medical types of, or, you know, context available to help you do this. Of course, this is one of those instances of technology development, by definition, I cannot do without actually having an awareness of what I'm trying to recognize. To some extent, in fact, me and Alice just did a proposal, actually she did a proposal with some help from us. And one of the words of wisdom that we got from Alice was, you do not want to be developing technology for NIH. You want to have an initial prototype, and then you want to convince NIH that now what you're going to be doing is modifying or improving upon the existing technology and hypothesis-driven method. So that's why it gets a little more complicated when you go to some things like behavior. I mean, I would really love to get a sense of how to get depression or dementia types of models that I can build, that as a technologist, that I can actually build representations for. So, I mean, on that scientific thought, this is another one of those axes that we don't know.
I think at the moment, the U.S. people are monopolizing this.
I was going to suggest that Gunnar take the question, and then we'll come back to our comments. We'll come back.
Thank you, Bill. There has been and will, I'm sure, be a lot of talk about health status, health concerns, and cancer resistance. So I haven't put the spotlight in another place just for a second, and that is how technology is and will change all our daily lives in many, many different ways. In how we get information, how we process information, how we deal with authorities, how we do our shopping, our banking, and how we interact with public information, public terminals, public vending machines, there are many examples. Now, I'm sure that as we get older, we want to reap the benefits of all this technology as much as anybody else. And it's not a question so much of if you have this special needs, an expression I don't like, because we're talking about the whole population. I want to switch the perspective. When we look at the whole population, people are different, people have different capabilities, people have different possibilities, different limitations. I'm talking also about the promises that we are trying to develop and trying to apply, to look at this as an issue of inclusion, of including everybody. And especially, of course, people are getting older. And the technologies here, then are of course very much about interfaces, and also about content, how content is organized and presented and so on. It's about multimedia, it could be about sensors, about agents, speech technology. And this is something that I would like to put the spotlight on and promote research in.
Thanks, Kenneth. Oh, we've already had some quite good contributions in looking at the importance of ensuring that any future R&D activity is perhaps more inclusive of end users than perhaps it is at the moment. I'm sure Peter would echo that with the work that he's been doing with the Equal Network and supporting the Equal Programme. That doesn't tell me, of course, that family work has to be much more multidisciplinary. I'm often surprised how few programmes in this area actually really are multidisciplinary in the sense of actively involving people from a wide variety of different backgrounds, having an equal role within that particular research activity. Often it is driven by an engineering team, or it's driven by people from a different background, computing background. I think it really does have to be equal partners coming from different backgrounds if the crucial issues of linking technology with key needs aspects are going to be met. One item I would like to just bring out that really reflects my own interest in looking at technology and supporting people with dementia. And so much of the issues that people like myself are involved in are kind of looking at things like safety and security and ensuring people are okay in their own homes, the right situations arising which are going to cause problems. But so often you feel, okay, so we get this right and we actually provide these sort of systems. What actually is this leaving people? What actually is it leaving their environments to be right? Because you see so many people with dementia actually finding it quite hard to fill their time constructively and enjoyably, and that so much of their quality of life actually isn't related to how secure they're feeling or whether they feel some of the problems that are occurring in their life are being dealt with by their carers or by use of technology. I feel that there are lots of interesting areas within the development of constructive leisure activities would be a very useful area to provide further research funding. And there's been some excellent work done in the UK actually on looking at reminiscence devices that are able to provide the user with images of multimedia images which can enable them to reflect on their past history. Very difficult to set up because they have to be personalised almost by definition, but nevertheless the trials that were done with those particular projects were extremely successful. You couldn't get people away from these devices. So the area of how you actually use your time constructively and get some quality out of that time, I think are issues which don't need to be addressed.
Thank you. Thank you, Roger. I think despite the concern for the role of the user and the business case and politics and the infrastructure of healthcare, we've seen a great deal of sensitivity for those issues today, so it's not as if we're leaving that behind. This is a very complicated area in which to work. There are so many different stakeholders that it makes it very, very difficult, I think, for researchers to negotiate their way through the area. And there is a danger of the research content being divorced from the context of the application of that research. And of course that's something we have to work against. But the natural reaction is, because it's so complex, I think it is tempting to see funders in particular wanting bigger and all-embracing projects because it is so bigger. And I wonder, because it's so complex, how far that top-down approach of directing programs in this area can really go. And it's important that's counterbalanced by the bottom-up approach. And I think that was put very eloquently by earlier this morning. The issue of where science fits, where's the science? Is it all technology? I think, again, that requires us thinking about science in a different way. There's a hell of a lot of research required, and I'm not sure where science stops and research begins. And you know, this is the science of multidisciplinarity. It's a new style of science, and if we see it in terms of traditional science, then we'll say it's not science. So there are major challenges, scientific challenges. The basic way in which we do our work, of the methodologies of multidisciplinary working, of the synthesis of the basic disciplines, which are there in the smart homes area. And this is a wonderful area in which to redefine or add to our definitions of what science are. So I see some exciting opportunities for us as researchers and scientists. I see some exciting opportunities for funders in recognising the nature of facilitating, or the need to facilitate, that type of science without being over-prescriptive and coming up with agendas which develop by in smoky room by the science establishment, which isn't really close enough to what we're seeing and what you're seeing working from the bottom up. So lots of issues about what are the priorities over the next few years for research and for the research infrastructure.
We could take a few comments now from the
I'm Song Kim Moon. I work at Georgetown University Medical Center in Washington, D.C. I find your diagram of rings very interesting. And I wonder whether some of you can help us to think this through. By building smart homes of some sort, and you characterize it as a smart person.
Smart person.
Right. And I find that concept to be very interesting. Then are we trying to bring those three rings into the person's home, or conceptually are we trying to expand the person's home out into three rings by using information technology? Any suggestions how we might think this process?
I mean, I didn't talk about design, but I think fundamentally it starts with good design way before technology. I think you need to design communities and environments that keep those three rings, you know, held together and then add technology incrementally as one needs it. But if you don't start with design and people and communities and healthy social interactions, you're really missing the boat. But since this was a conference on technology, I didn't get into that.
You become Lord of the Rings.
Because I think what's fascinating about the ring diagram is it was an English textbook, and no member of the English upper classes ever did anything in the centre ring, in the middle ring. But to be more serious, what I think is interesting is that this morning we had a list of the topics for the Washington conference, and the list was a list of technologies. A number of people today have been saying that we ought to be focusing on users, and presumably users' needs and wants. And I'm not saying that we ought to have one or the other, but it would seem to me that it would be useful to think in terms of the conference in Washington, not only about technologies, but also about users and their needs and wants and how we find it out. And bearing in mind, of course, that when we're discussing a user's needs and wants, compared to technology, it depends very much, the answers you get depends very much on the sophistication of the user and the sophistication of the technology. So at the beginning of the end of the last but one century, we couldn't go to users to ask them about transport and expect them to design a motor car, whereas now it would be foolish to try and design the next generation of motor cars without asking users about them. So it's a question about the conference and how we should divide up the structure of it.
But you've got a user track, haven't you? No. They should know that. They don't.
I'd just say we do have a consumer perspective track at the conference.
Right. I think we ought to be looking at research in terms of those. And,
right. That's all the users.
Not the user track.
They're not intermingled.
Lots of hands.
My name is Bill Herman, and I'm with the Food and Drug Administration. I manage some physics and engineering labs for that group. I had a question about having to do with a systems evaluation of the things that are being created here. And I give two quick examples. The first is a lot of the systems being described here are wireless through and through. Electromagnetic interference and electromagnetic compatibility are very difficult things to assess when you know that you have a stable system. When you have a system that is open and dynamic and immersed in an environment where lots of things could be walking in that are either potential victim devices, such as implanted electronics in a patient, or potential sources of radiation. We've seen, and many of you may know of an incident in Texas where a high-definition TV station came on the air and shut down an entire wireless cardiology suite in a local hospital. So from a system standpoint, I'm curious about whether these things are being dealt with at this stage, and if so, how. And the other example I wanted to give you the same thing is that it seems to me that we're talking about here fundamentally distributed systems of intelligent modules eventually. Whether or not one wants to use the word smart. Nevertheless, if we again have open, dynamic sorts of systems, aren't we in the process here of creating a new level of entity, the network, which is likely to have emergent properties which will not be obvious at all in the characteristics of the individual components? And again, if so, how are designers thinking about that and dealing with that?
Does someone want to respond to that from the panel? Those are some tough questions, but good question, and good ones to raise to the presenters at our conference in Washington.
It will become very practical questions.
Yeah.
I could have a go at saying something about it. Of course, having multiple sources of electromagnetic radiation is not new. We all communicate with light and have done ever so. It's a question of range, wavelengths, and so on. Now, it so happens that your example of the television station is a very powerful source of emission, competing with very short-range devices, and the mere short range, of course, is to some extent a guarantee of non-mutual interference. So the control really has to be to reserve frequency bands for low-power, short-range devices, mutual interference can to some extent be controlled by them not being too close to one another, or having, like the colors on a map, not having similar colored ones too close to one another. It's a television station which has to be, in this particular area, which has to be controlled. But you can, of course, use infrared, for instance. Infrared, from that point of view, is much safer because it's stopped by walls. I think if I was God in this field, there would be some merit, I think, in saying, well, wherever possible, use infrared, because it's unlikely to get out and cause havoc next door.
I think the systems policy is much easier if any of the designers are God.
Anyone who has it?
Answer Smail, like it's kind of going on. Well, I have some comments and perhaps maybe some answers to previous questions. Going back to the discussion about the scientific merits and the topics raised this workshop, I think there are potential scientific merits, and a range of the topics that can be identified goes anywhere from enhancing human capabilities, enhancing their cognitive capabilities, if you wish, towards making these smart devices or computers or smart modules capable of learning about the users. And these are serious research issues in many respects. Now, having users involved directly in this research, we call it user-centered design, which has pretty clear methodology and evaluation procedures, also gives another quality. And I see this kind of the research very tightly coupled with the users, and users are part of that. I'll talk some of these topics tomorrow, but those are pretty identifiable areas where some scientific results can be achieved. And in addition to that, Gio mentioned this morning another criteria that NSF is using, which is broader impact. You can just imagine the impact in, you know, population of other users that could be made with any improvements in this respect.
Okay, Bill and I had several questions which we'd like to pass to the panel, but I think we prefer to take questions from the floor. Peter has one.
Well, just to follow up with something which was said earlier in relation to the equity, I suppose you would call it, equity of access to healthcare. We had a very interesting presentation about people's computer literacy and the division of the population into the enabled and the disenabled or unenabled in relation to computing. That, I think, relates to equity. I think I saw the word ethics only mentioned once on a slide during the whole day, and I don't think it was actually vocalized, it was just written there, which also relates to this. And I'd make a plea against freezing technology. I can understand the arguments that we have plenty of technology, we don't need any more. But actually, in order to allow everybody to be accessible,